When is it that you start feeling like a grown-up asking for a friend? So when I was younger and my children were much younger, I remember I went on a business trip, which that doesn't often happen as a pastor, but every once in a while we'll go out of town. And so I went out of town, and I remember how much my daughters, they missed me. And you know, I knew that they would miss me because, you know, I'm the daddy and stuff. And I missed them too. And, you know, but I said, well, why do you miss me? They said, well, because we can't sleep. Well, why can't you sleep? Because we're scared. Well, what are you scared of? Well, you're not here to protect us. And then it kind of hit me. I'm the protector? Are you kidding me? I mean, all right. So I guess that's sort of the role of the stereotypical dad. And it goes all the way back, like from caveman days where, you know, the man would go out and hunt and provide and kill something and drag it back. But then whenever the saber-toothed tiger's family got upset that you killed one of them and they came after the caveman's family, it was the caveman's job to step up and, you know, protect the family. So, you know, it's provide and protect. And so that meant I was a protector. But I don't really know that they had thought that one through very well, because what am I going to do? I mean, seriously, it's not like I got martial arts training. I wasn't in the military. I don't even have a gun. I mean, it's like my line of defense is my alarm system and my two dogs. And trust me, they ain't going to stop anybody. And so I'm thinking the only protecting that I can do is I can slow the intruder down long enough for my family to safely escape. I mean, that's what it is. And so all of a sudden I realized people are looking at me to be the grown-up. I'm 48 years old. I'm still surprised that people look to me as a grown-up. I mean, so I'm seriously wondering, when do you start feeling that way? Because I thought, all right, well, you know, maybe you start feeling grown-up when you graduate high school. And I graduated high school, I didn't feel like a grown-up. And then maybe when you're in college, you'll feel like a grown-up. Well, I certainly didn't feel or act like one when I was in college. Well, then you get married, and well, that's when you start feeling like a grown-up, right? Nope, didn't happen for me then. When you have kids, that's when you're going to feel like a grown-up. No, no. How about when your kid graduates from high school? That's when you're an adult, right? Yeah, no, didn't happen. What about when your kid graduates from college, gets a real job, then you're an adult? No, yeah, not that hadn't happened yet either. Still not feeling like a grown-up. So I'm wondering, when do you start feeling like an adult? Anyone? Yep, that's what I thought. You never feel like an adult. You just feel like you all the time, right? Because it's kind of strange. I mean, my parents are the adults. You know, that's who the grown-ups are. It's my parents. Because when I have problems, who do I rely on? I go to them, right? That's what you do. You go to your parents. And so if they're the grown-ups, well, then I can't be the grown-up, even though I realize that I'm now the same age that my parents were when I moved up, when I left the house. That's crazy, because they were so old then. And so the fact that people look to me to be a grown-up, which I'm sure is exactly what you wanted to hear from your pastor today, is people count on me? Are you kidding? And I'm glad I'm not the only one that feels this way, because it's just shocking to think that there might be somebody depending on me to do something, to take care of them. That's nuts, because I know me. I ain't that guy. And I think that's probably exactly how the disciples kind of felt. In our gospel reading today, Jesus has been curing the sick and casting out demons and doing all these things. And he looks at all the people gathered, and he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray to the Lord of harvest that he may call people to go out into the harvest. Which means to send other people out there. And then it goes on to say that there were 12, that there were 12 of the disciples, there were 12 of them in particular that Jesus called out, the 12 apostles. Because, you know, something you may not realize, a lot of times in Scripture when it says disciples, it's not just talking about these 12 guys, it's a lot of times it's talking about all the people that follow Jesus. But there were 12 in particular ones. There were 12 special ones. And here they are. You've got, first, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. So let's look at these guys, huh? You've got Simon. We've heard of Simon, right? He's the first one. He's number one. He's like the best one, the rock star. And he's the one that spends most of the Bible digging his foot out of his mouth, and then he ends up, you know, denying Jesus three times. That's the best one. Then you have his brother Andrew, and you know what his claim to fame is? Yeah, he's Peter's brother. You got James and John. They're also in the top four, right? They were fishermen, you know, no big deal. Their claim to fame was they decided to argue about which one of them was the greatest.
I'm sure that was their shining moment. Excuse me, it's not good.
And so then you have, you have James, the other James, that he's just known as the other James. And then you've got Simon of the Canaanite, because he can't be the other Simon. And you've got Matthew, the tax collector. Oh, the big time sinner. We talked about him last week. Philip and Bartholomew. And then there's Thomas. Oh, he doubted. And then, of course, you have Judas, the one who betrayed him. These are the rock stars of the Christian faith, ladies and gentlemen. And can you imagine how they felt when Jesus said, "Hey guys, I'm going to send you out like sheep into the midst of wolves." Who are you sending now, Jesus? Us? Do you know us? Have you seen us? We are not the best of the best. We're at best ordinary. You know? I mean, what about those people over there? Now, I'm sure at first, you know, they're feeling pretty good about themselves. Jesus picked me. But then sooner or later, they realized, are we grown-ups? We're not even adults yet. And you want us to go and do what? To go out into the city, and it's on us to proclaim the good news that you're coming, that you're here. And you're going to use us to cure the sick and to cast out demons and to raise the dead? Us, Jesus? Them, Jesus? That's the best we got? I mean, come on, it's like a presidential election. Seriously. We can't do better than that. You know what's crazy? Jesus is still sending ordinary people today. People like me and you add into this world. Huh. You know what that means? God trusts us. God trusts us. You, me, we know our faults and failings. We know that there are better folks than us out there, and yet we have been chosen to go and spread the good news of Jesus Christ. Maybe you're perfect, but I'm not. Maybe you're good, I'm not. Maybe you're worthy, I'm not. And yet God trusts us. How's that going to work? But then get this. Not only did Jesus send them out, he sent them with a packing list, or lack thereof. He said, here's what you don't take with you. Everything. Don't take anything with you. No extra pair of shoes. No extra tunic. No money. Don't take any money either, by the way. Just stop at people's houses. And if they like you, stay. If they don't, leave. That's the instructions. Don't bring anything with you. So you, being the ordinary person that you are, nothing special, The things that might make you special, the things that you might be able to hold on to and give a little support, leave those behind and go. And that's what he called them to do. That's what he sent them to do. And that's what he sends us to do too. But here we are, nobody special, nobody worthy. And because of that, we're going to bring our baggage, aren't we? Yeah, Jesus, I mean, I'll go, but I'm bringing this with me. I'm bringing it all with me. I'm going to bring my money. Mm-hmm. Because without that, I don't know if I can handle it. Because as long as I got money in the bank, I know I'm going to be all right. Or you know what? I'm going to bring my wardrobe because people aren't going to listen to me unless I look my best. I'm going to bring what I believe in. I'm going to bring my politics with me because if there's nobody else to protect me, my government will. We can trust in them. Yeah, you know, the last service laughed at that too. I don't get it. But we take everything that we rely on and we bring it with us. Because why? Because God trusts us, but we don't trust us. But it's not us that we don't trust. It's that we don't believe that God can do anything through us. Isn't that the truth? Because we say we trust God, but when it all boils down to it, do we really believe that God can use people like us to accomplish the world? God trusts us, and therefore we're called to trust God. We're called to trust that God will give us the right words, that God will give us the strength, that God will give us the abilities. God will provide whatever it is that we need to get the job done. Trust God because God trusts you, my friend. God believes in you. God has gifted you and has given you all that you need to do what you're called to do. Trust that. Trust God. That you are enough. That you are exactly who you are, where you are, when you are, how you are, what you are for a reason. That's the baggage you're called to bring. That's on your packing list. Trust God because God trusts you. Amen.